welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my loves. Happy day. This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Today, we have a great conversation, just a straight up textbook TMS success story with Shivani, who experienced what so many people are writing to me about these days, all sorts of pelvic diagnoses, pelvic floor dysfunction, IC, pelvic pain, urinary frequency, just such a very, very big TMS symptom that has been communicated to me quite a bit lately. So there was that, but she also had the back pain, the neck pain issues since childhood, like so many of us have, and the attendant anxiety. So we are going to talk about it all. And her story is great because she's just such a calm and wise reporter, just like get in there, say what happened, say how it felt, what she did to get better, and what it's like now. Just a really great, solid TMS success story. So psyched to share it with you today. Also, just quickly to remind you, as I always do, as we approach Omega in the months leading up to it, if you would like to come to my only in-person retreat this year, people are writing me emails constantly. Are you doing one in Europe? Are you doing one in California? I hope as the world continues to open up and we really climb fully out of the pandemic to travel the world more. But this year, Omega is my only in-person retreat. So if you'd like to join us, it's June 25th through the 30th. Go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the retreats tab, or go to eomega.org and search my name, Nicole Sachs. Okay, my loves, not much else to report at this moment. Just really excited to bring you this story of inspiration. And as Shivani says, the most important way to cultivate belief is just to stick with these success stories and realize that you too can be well. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Today I'm here with Shivani. Welcome, Shivani.
Hi, thank you so much.
So glad you're here with us today. So as is typical, my fashion, I get a grillion emails and people are telling me their success stories. And I was just saying to Shivani before we jumped on the air how there's nothing better than receiving more than I can handle because it's just such a gift to know how many people are being affected by the work. But Shivani's email stood out and Lisa and I invited her on and she graciously said yes. And so we're going to talk today about pelvic pain, about pelvic diagnoses, about some related/unrelated back, neck, shoulder stuff, anxiety, and however it goes. I know that so many people are writing to me. The pelvic stuff is just so prevalent right now for men and for women, believe it or not. And so I'm just excited to have this conversation. So Shivani, take it away. Tell us your experience.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much for having me. I can start in childhood, I guess, because I kind of had some TMS stuff in childhood as well. I experienced migraines as a kid, like the earliest being about 8 years old. And I used to take Advil, and they would go away. And when I was about 10 years old, I remember I was out with some friends and I was carrying this backpack and I noticed this really sharp pain in my shoulder and it radiated to my arm and my lower back, my spine. And to give some background, I was a pretty anxious kid and I was pretty socially anxious. And that day I was having a lot of anxiety because I was with some new friends and I don't know, I was young. And I remember the pain was alleviated when I sat down for a while and I took the backpack off and I ended up having to like leave my friends and sit. So I think that took some of my anxiety away. So I felt better. And then after that incident, I started having this on and off shoulder pain. And I didn't know why it was there, but I knew that, well, I attributed it to me, the carrying heavy things.
Which is so normal. I mean, that's what everybody does. Anybody, whether it's a child or an adult, when they come into this work through symptoms, you associate it with the most obvious thing it would be, you know, and that's just so normal.
Yeah, exactly. That was like, I knew I wanted an answer because I didn't know why it was, I was having this pain. And I was like, okay, it must be because I'm carrying something really heavy, even though I'd carried heavy things before and I don't remember like injuring myself. So, yeah. And then I had, just to give some background, because I think it's important, I had like a pretty rough childhood. There was no like capital T trauma, but I definitely experienced a lot of invalidation, and I was really privileged in a lot of ways, but there were some things that were pretty hard for me, and my parents definitely did the best they could, and I love them, but I know now that all of my needs weren't met, and I know, and as a kid I didn't know this, so it was even harder to experience this pain, and even I'll explain my later pain, but I know that that has such a huge effect on why I had pain. So that's important, I think, to mention. And
And the truth is, I think it's important to bring connection to this. Nobody gets out of childhood unscathed. Like literally nobody. You know, I mean, everyone has little T trauma because truthfully, and I'm a parent of three, there's no way to meet every need of a child. And there's also each of our personalities that go into it. So, you know, I really think that when we look back, it's so important to just normalize everything and just say, and okay, that's what TMS is. TMS is when the body carries what the mind and heart can no longer contain, and it doesn't have to be scary. It can be more of a normal process.
Yes, I love when you say that because it's so easy to look back on like childhood and things that, weren't so great and when needs weren't met and just be angry and frustrated. But I love when you kind of normalize that and, you can do the work and just work through it. So,
Yeah, we'll
yeah,
talk
that's.
more about that later because I've been thinking so much lately about the fact that even though TMS needs a name and we have to call it a syndrome, it's just honestly freaking human life. Like it, there's nothing other than perfection about the way the nervous system seeks to protect us. And if we knew it wasn't dangerous, and if we knew literally it was the same thing as like sadness or fear or anger or being in a bad mood, we wouldn't be so, you know, always distraught. But anyway, here we are. You know, we have to live in the world that we are, which is that pain and syndromes are unpleasant and seen as a problem. And I get it. But anyway, I
Yeah.
digress. Go on.
Yeah, for sure. So I had a pretty hard childhood. I've dealt with a lot of things I'm sure a lot of people have dealt with. And yeah, so I ended up finding out like years later that I had a herniated disc. I had an MRI for the migraines I experienced as a kid, actually, because they had bothered me for years on and off. And I remember the neurologist came in and he was like, did you know you have a herniated disc on your neck? And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And I remember my mom was like, oh, I have that too. It's not a big deal. And then that was like one of the things, like, I didn't think much of it, but it kind of made sense. But I kind of like took that and ran with it. And I was like, okay, this is why I have pain. I have a structural issue. And actually, after that, after going to the doctor and him saying that, I actually think I had more pain at that point because
Makes sense.
I knew I was like, oh, I have a structural issue, And yeah, so at that point, I even more attributed the physical, stress of me carrying something heavy or moving a certain way. I was like, oh, I'm exacerbating my herniated disc. So yeah, that made the pain worse. And during that period, I also found out I had this gynecological condition. I don't want to get into too much detail, but it was a structural issue and it didn't cause me pain, but I had to have surgery. It was something I was born with. I had to have surgery to be able to have my reproductive parts function normally. But it made gynecological exams very painful. And I remember being on the exam table and I was like screaming in pain. And my mom, was like, didn't know what to do. So she was like, stop screaming. And the doctor was like, I'm so sorry. It was just a whole traumatic thing. And that kind of started my pelvic pain. Like, I don't want to say trauma, but it was pretty traumatic. And yeah, so that was
But
kind of the start
I
of
want
it.
to say something about that because I really want to, once again, I feel like the theme in this interview is going to be to normalize things. This is the way TMS works. It often starts with something that makes sense. So you have a structural difference, let's call it a difference, just like I have a structural difference in my back. Yours required surgery to get reproduction clear. Great. But because so many feelings are attached to the places in our body that are deemed abnormal by the medical model or just by, you know, common conversation, that's a place that gets targeted by the nervous system as a place where there can be an outlet for this TMS response. And so I think that's oftentimes what's so confusing to people is they're like, yeah, but I do have a problem. I do have a finding, you know, the neck and the pelvic stuff. And the problem is when things become chronic, they no longer have anything to do with the original finding. And that's when people get really confused. So I'm sure that speaks to your story.
Oh my God. Yes. It literally, that was my whole thing. Every time I found a structural issue, I became, you know, as you say, like I attached so much meaning to it and I just became so just my anxiety and I, like, you know, almost like obsessive. I was like, I have this issue, you know, I have a problem. This is why I'm in pain. And it just kind of perpetuated the cycle. So after that structural issue, I found out I did get surgery and like the structural issue did go away and that pain stopped, but I definitely brought that kind of pain and trauma, you know, kind of translated into my other pelvic pain issues, which I'll get into. So that happened in college. And then a year or so later, I was in a relationship and it was, I'll say it's pretty abusive, emotionally abusive relationship, in college. And during that relationship, I had chronic UTIs. And I remember I got my first UTI. I never had a UTI before. And then I got antibiotics. I felt better. And then, you know, a few weeks later, got another UTI, antibiotics, felt better. But I just literally had them, you know, it happened that I literally had them every few weeks. And so much that one of the doctors I saw was like, you know, you should just go on a prophylactic antibiotic, which, you know, is really bad for you. But I almost did that. I didn't end up doing that because we broke up. And I had tons of trips to doctors and I went to the ER multiple times. I had a kidney infection at one point, which is so dangerous. And I ended up getting out of the relationship and I literally never had a UTI again. Never had one to this day. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it makes sense now that they just stopped because the relationship was so bad and it was so stressful. So going back to the back pain, I ended up studying abroad in college and part of the program was having an internship. And after, you know, this part of my life, I'd had the pelvic pain, the UTIs, I still had the back pain on and off. I had like flares of it. But I had a lot of anxiety and I always have around my performance at work and school. My whole life I've struggled with ADHD and just attention issues. And I was a very hyperactive child and my dad is an immigrant and it's just, there's this culture, at least, you know, in my family of, you know, needing to be the best, try your hardest, yes. You know, school is the, like, if you're not in my dad's culture, if you're not like a doctor or a lawyer, it's kind of frowned upon and that's generalizing, but, at least
no, I get city. It. I get it because I was also raised by an immigrant father. First, you know, I'm the first generation American born child, you know, because he was born abroad. And it was the same thing. I mean, it probably a different cultural background, but I do find that it's like the American child gets pressured to like be amazing, be the best, you know, like it's not acceptable unless you are. And that can generate a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. And just having, I think that's a lot of projection that my parents did, but yeah, it's a lot and it's a very universal experience, I think. And, so that was, and sometimes is still a large source of my anxiety. I do still struggle with it, occasionally, but looking back on it, it wasn't a surprise, that I ended up injuring myself at work. And I remember I was interning in a law office and I was so stressed out and anxious and, I remember dropping a binder. I was like organizing a bunch of files on a shelf and I bent down and I picked up the binder. And I remember like I had the most like 20 out of 10 searing pain when I stood up.
That's exactly what happened to me.
It's like, yeah, it was just, I had dropped things. Like it was so weird because I dropped things before and, you know, I'd move my body.
Of course. It has nothing to do with having dropped the binder. It's just that was the moment that your reservoir went over the edge and you went into fight or flight and your nervous system sent the pain to divert and protect. It's such a common situation.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And yeah, I couldn't move my head any which way without like 20 out of 10 pain. And I ended up, you know, I was in Ireland at the time. Their healthcare system's a little different. So I actually like, I was there for 3 months and there was not enough time for me to get an MRI because I was on like a waiting list and whatnot. So I ended up being put on a lot of heavy pain medication and I had to miss most of my classes for the remainder of my time abroad. And it was just, it really kind of ruined my time there and really was destroying my life. And because I was in so much pain, I came back to the States and I ended up going to a bunch of doctors and I ended up getting a steroid shot. I had to go under anesthesia, which was, you know, a whole thing. That's, you know, not like a light thing to do. It's not, it's like a procedure. And I remember I got the steroid shot and it helped. I woke up from the anesthesia and literally 2 hours later, I was like, oh, I'm not in pain anymore. And I remember I was talking to the doctor and she was like, yeah, it should, it takes a few weeks to kind of like do its thing and, you know, stop, suppress the inflammation and whatnot. And that also helps me believe, you know, that it was TMS because it shouldn't have worked that fast.
Correct. I've recently heard this exact story where the person has immediate pain cessation and the doctor was like, oh, wait, it doesn't take effect yet.
Yeah. It's like, I read this book, I think it's called it's called Mind Over Medicine. And it's by a doctor who talks about that and just like the effect of having a good like practitioner and like them telling you, hey, this will work for you. And like that belief in itself can make you feel better. So that was like,
of course, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was still in pain, like a little bit, but it was more on and off rather than constant as it was when I was like a kid. So it became more on and off. And I went back to college and I got physical therapy and my physical therapist was really nice. And it was kind of therapeutic in a way to go to the physical therapist just to be in like an environment where I felt like I could be helped, but it honestly didn't really help much. And the pain would move. So at this point, the pain was pretty intermittent and it wasn't constant. So it would move through my shoulder and my arm. Like one day it would be in my neck. One day I would have this pain, which I, you know, attribute it to being nerve pain just because of the nature of it. And that would be in my arm and it would move throughout the day. And it was also really positional. So I remember I would wake up in the morning, I'd be pain-free. I'd go to class. I would sit, you know, type on my computer. And if I felt like my shoulders were hunching up, I was like, I would get pain. And then I'd be like, oh, you know, this pain is because my shoulders are hunching up. Right. But in the morning, I was totally
it's all
fine.
Brain. It's all brain conditioning. You're like, we should put you in a TMS textbook. Your story is so, because this is the way it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And looking back at it, I could like look at it like that. But when I was in it, I was in it. Like, it
oh
was,
yeah, man. When you're in it, you are in it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot. I know every podcast of yours I've listened to, everyone, you know, says the same thing. And So eventually the pain let up, and it just kind of slowly, gradually just went away. And that was over a few months. Like I was still going to physical therapy. But I ended up getting out of a relationship and I think most of my stress and my anxiety was kind of centered around my relationship and the breakup. So I think because of that, my mind was more focused on like, I know you say like anxiety is TMS and I really think that's what happened. So the pain let up, but then like, I don't know, I want to say a few weeks after the breakup and after the pain had kind of like stopped pretty much. I started having this urinary frequency and urgency.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Once again, we're just putting you in the textbook. So one thing goes and another thing rises. And especially the other thing that rose was something associated with a problem from before, because that's where you can put your fear and your meaning is the pelvic area. So totally, totally get it.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't think much of it because it was just, you know, frequency and urgency. It wasn't painful. It was just annoying. But then it got to a point where it would wake me up in the middle of the night. So that became frustrating. I'm sorry. And then one day I had a really, really bad bladder pain and it felt like UTI, but I don't know, for some reason it was just a little different. Like it was UTI pain, but I could just tell it was different. I don't know why. I just had this feeling. I was bloated and I had all these UTI symptoms. So I went to the doctor. I actually went to the ER because I was in a ton of pain. And they did, you know, the urinalysis, and there was no bacteria found. And there was a lot of, there was elevated white blood cells, like leukocytes. And, you know, the doctor said, you know, your urine looks infected, but there's no bacteria. So that was really disheartening because I was so used to going to the doctor and getting an antibiotic, feeling better. But yeah, so the pain eventually spread. Actually, I should go back and say, so they gave me pain medication. They actually gave me antibiotics and they were like, oh, you know, maybe you have a UTI with bacteria and we're just not picking it up in the urinalysis and let's send it out for a culture. So that takes a few days. So they gave me the antibiotics and I, you know, held out hope, you know, these are going to make me feel better. But like I said before, like in the back of my mind, I was like, there's something that's a little off here. Like it just doesn't feel right. But I did take the antibiotics and the pain eventually spread to my whole pelvic region. And there was, you know, pain in my bladder, pain in my, you know, just whole pelvic area. And then, you know, there was like the fact that I couldn't be intimate without pain, which in itself was, you know, really hard. Like,
of course,
like
you said.
Yeah. And I ended up going to so many doctors and I went to urologists. I went to your gynecologist. I went to gynecologists, like I think 10 doctors probably in the span of a few months. And during that time, I, you know, Dr. Google diagnosed me with a bunch of things.
Oh boy, like, you went through it, honey.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And I ended up in like these, you know, Reddit groups and Facebook groups that were like, yeah, just really bad. And I ended up getting a diagnosis from one doctor of pelvic floor dysfunction. Another doctor diagnosed me with interstitial cystitis. And I remember going to a urogynecologist, which is like a super specialized doctor. So I was like, you know, they really know what they're doing. And this was the doctor that diagnosed me with interstitial cystitis. And I remember I was like crying and I asked her, I was like, does this ever go away? And she looked at me and she looked sad. Like she didn't, you know, want to say this, but she said, no, you know, this is something that's chronic. And
I'm having a physical reaction and it's so funny. You would think that after hearing these freaking stories 100,000,000,000 times, I wouldn't continue to have the rage and like the sadness and all my physical reactions to these stories. And I'll just tell you why, because I'm in the process of writing another book and just last night I was writing about the plight of the chronic patient and how there are two places where it's so upsetting. The first is the millions of stories I hear from the field, and you are now another one of them, where a doctor looks at you with compassion and says, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. You're just going to have to live with it, which is hell. And then there's potentially even worse. Yeah, this condition's chronic for the rest of your life. But here are like 10 different incredibly expensive or, you know, painful procedures / treatment / new innovations that have no guarantee of pain cessation. And those are the two places that I find people so often, which is why I'm obviously such a warrior for mind-body medicine. But your story is just killing me a little bit because I can only imagine how that felt in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was awful. And I knew that the doctor was like trying to help me. Like, I know, like, right. I heard you say, you know, they're so well-meaning, but like they can only do so much with what they're given. And I'm a nurse myself and I really have a lot of respect for the medical model. I think there's, you know, so many great things, but I do think things, you know, need to change. And I definitely believe like what the doctors and practitioners, what they tell you really, really matters. And honestly, if I had believed that doctor and just accepted that as my fate and went down the rabbit hole of taking all of these, you know, analgesics and all this, you know, pain medication as my fate, I honestly would probably still be in pain today. Like I don't think I would have pursued any.
There's no way to get out of it when the brain and the nervous system are the reason that the pain is being signaled.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the pain medications I took in like Ireland, like the heavy drugs and some of these, the pain medications that, you know, helped with the bladder pain, and they didn't really work. Like none of them really worked. And it yeah, honestly, they had more
that's
of
the problem.
Yeah. They didn't work. And that's kind of, that's also, I think, one of the things that clued me into like, this probably isn't, you know, a structural thing. This is like a mental thing. Cause these pain medications in theory, at least like what I've been taught and stuff, like should work. But yeah, so, and I also want to say that before I found this work, so at that time, after I got that diagnosis and the multiple diagnoses, I had spent so much money like on vitamins, and I had this like extensive urinalysis done by this doctor who, you know, said like, we're going to take your urine, look at all of the bacteria that's in your bladder. And, you know, there's supposed to be bacteria in your bladder, not all of it's bad, but they're like, you know, we can pinpoint some of the bacteria that's bad, and we're going to put you in an antibiotic or whatever medication and make it better. So I remember I drove like 3 hours, to drop off my urine. And then I came back to get my results back, and I wanted to see if I had some type of embedded infection.
Right.
And it all came back clean. So that was even more disheartening. And I was on an elimination diet, and
yes. Then there's the elimination diet, right?
Yeah. And I honestly had never had a bad relationship with food. That was something that, you know, was one thing I think I didn't struggle with. And then I ended up struggling with it because of this diet that I was on. I like couldn't eat, you know, acidic foods, certain vegetables. Like it was pretty nonsensical now that I look back at it. But I was desperate, and so the only positive thing that came out of that for me was I stopped drinking alcohol and I started exercising every day. By exercising, I mean like walking lightly, but I tried, even if I was in pain, like I tried to get some movement in. And on the days that I was in like too much pain, you know, I couldn't, but every day that I could, I, you know, did some walking, or at least I got some sun. But other than that, cutting out foods was really not a good idea. It gave me a really poor relationship with food. And it's something that I've, you know, I don't really struggle with it now, but sometimes it sits in the back of my mind. But
yeah, I just wanted to quickly just jump in about elimination diets. I hate to be so strident, but I have never in my years of doing this heard a positive outcome from an elimination diet. And that's not to say I haven't heard people that said, oh, it helped my symptoms in the short term, because I think similar to your steroid shot giving you immediate pain cessation when it really shouldn't have, there are many things we do that just bring a temporary calm to the nervous system and to the brain and make us feel like we're going to be okay, which of course, you know, when you're not dysregulated, the symptoms stop firing. So that makes sense to me, certainly. Some people would call it the placebo effect, but sometimes I think that that word seems to negate the huge power of what nervous system regulation looks like in the entire body. So I tend to over-explain. But elimination diets stir anger. They stir fear. And they are not the cause. Food is not the cause of these problems. I get it that food causes inflammation, but real inflammation is caused by the brain sending signals of inflammation to the body, which is all having to do with the core reason for the struggle, the pain, the syndrome, which is the mind-body connection and all the things we discuss here. So yeah, just for anyone who is, you know, clicking on this podcast because they have IC or they have pelvic stuff and they're dealing with the elimination diet, just please know, I don't believe in it. And I, you know, like I said, I hold the medical model with high esteem. I don't think any doctor or practitioner or nutritionist is out to hurt anyone. I just think these things don't generally work. And like you said, it was causing you more problems.
Yeah. I wish I had heard you say that before all of this, but I'm so glad that I found your work. Exactly.
All right. So Shivani, why don't you tell us when things turned? Like, how did you find this work? What went down?
Yeah. So when I was having back pain, in getting the steroid shot, I actually was given one of Dr. Sarno's book. I think like it was the Heal Your Back Pain one. I forgot what it's called. And I read it and it definitely resonated with me, but I didn't really like believe that it was possible for me. But when I had the pelvic pain, after I had, you know, done all these things like the vitamins, the elimination diets. I was looking for like holistic mind body work, and I found the Like Mind, Like Body podcast.
The Curable podcast. Yes.
Yes. And you were a guest on it. And I listened to like some of the podcasts. I downloaded the Curable app. I kind of listened to the science of it, and that really resonated with me because I'm pretty like, I need science to like,
of course. Yes. Yeah. Science. So good.
Yeah. It like for, I don't know, at that point for me, I was like, you know, this needs to be like researched and stuff. And so, yeah. So I kind of ran with that, and then I found you on their podcast, and then I found your podcast, and I started listening to one every day. I left every single Facebook and Reddit group I was in, which was hard because it was, you know, some source of, it gave me like, I felt less alone. Even though it was everyone kind of suffering collectively, I felt less alone. But yeah, so with your work, and I started journal speak every day. And I started slowly becoming more indifferent to the pain, and it was really hard, and this didn't happen overnight, but you know, with journaling every day, listening to a podcast every day, I found Dan Buglio's work. I found Dr. Schubner's, you know, book. I eventually had, you know, so much reassurance in my mind, like, you know, this is real. This is what's happening to me. If I do this work, I will feel better. And I started becoming indifferent to the pain. And mind you, like, I was an anxious mess before this, but yeah. Whitney Rideman's podcast was really reassuring. I'd emailed Dr. Schubner at one point, and he actually like emailed me back, which I was really surprised. It was awesome. And he was like, you know, telling me like why my symptoms probably weren't, you know, structural. And that was really reassuring as well. Yeah. So I eventually, you know, started going out with my friends more. I was more social, and I began incorporating foods, you know, that I wouldn't normally eat because of the fear. And I noticed that I had to kind of do that stuff, you know, stop ruminating about the pain, you know, start, you know, going out and being social before the pain actually like subsided. But once I did that and pushed myself, I actually eventually started to feel better. And it wasn't like one day I woke up like, oh my God, I'm not in pain anymore. It was like slowly but surely, I'd go out with my friends. I would have this like, I don't know, like acidic meal, like, I don't know, tomato soup or something, and I wouldn't think about it. And then hours later, I'd be like, wait, I just had.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, I just had this, it, you know, based on like my belief system, like it should make, like give me pain, but it didn't. So it was just proving that this was TMS and that stuff didn't matter. Yeah. So I still had bad days, but you know, after a few months, honestly, like 2-3 months, I was about 80% better. And this was like religiously doing the work. And, I ended up meeting my husband during that time, and you know, he's an angel, and he's someone I feel like I felt and feel so comfortable with, that when I was with him, I was so scared about like my pelvic pain and, you know, intimacy and stuff. But when I was with him, like all of that stuff went away. And, it, you know, when I met him, I had constant pain, and pretty much it kind of stopped. I had some flares that were pretty bad, and it was like one flare, and then I'd have this stretch of no pain. And at the beginning, the first few flares, like just bad pelvic pain, or I would have bad back pain, and it would never be both at the same time, which is like another reason I knew that this was TMS. And I got really scared because I was like, oh my God, you know, I didn't have pain, and now I have this, you know, really bad bladder pain. It's never going to go away. And I got really scared, and the fear started. But every single time that would happen, I would go back into the work, journal, take a look, you know, why is this happening? And really work on my indifference to the pain and treating it as an annoyance, and doubling down on the fact that this is emotional, you know, it's not structural. And I, you know, as they happen less and less, I stopped having so much fear because I had proof that they, you know, would go away.
Right.
Yeah. And so eventually I, you know, sorry, that was my cat. It pretty much went away. And I love what you say about pain being part of the human condition, because I've experienced pain coming back a handful of times, but I'm able every time to take it as a message. And it reminds me, you know, I don't like pain, but it reminds me to look at my life and my stress levels, and it lets me know if something isn't working for me, or if I need to, you know, journal, or if I need to talk about my feelings. And I end up journaling and it always goes away, which was really awesome. Yeah. And actually before, like 4 or 5 days ago, I actually started having this really mild, like bladder pain, and I hadn't had it for a year almost. And I remember telling my husband, I was like, oh my God, of course I have like a little pain before I go on this podcast.
The interview. I hear that so much.
Yeah. And I honestly, I was really proud of myself because it was, I treated it with so much indifference, and it took so much time to get to this point. But after, you know, working on this for honestly years, I just was able to, you know, be indifferent to it, and it went away in like a day, and I'm totally pain free today. And yeah. And I ended up going to nursing school. And after being in excruciating pain for years and, you know, thinking I'm never going to get better, I'm never going to have a life. And, yeah, so that's my story. And I'm so, so, so grateful for your work. I know that, you know, I know I did the work to make myself feel better, but without your work, I don't know where I'd be. Without this work, I don't know where I'd be today. And like I said, if I had listened to that doctor, you know, she was incredibly well-meaning, but if I had listened to her, you know, I don't know. I probably would still be in pain. And yeah, this is so important. So thank you for everything you do. And yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I want to say something that's coming up for me. It's sort of a bit of a spiritual slant, but I think it's worthwhile saying. So first of all, you're so welcome. And it never, ever, ever, ever gets old to hear that, because the concept of you so young, so vibrant, so full of possibilities, and I can just hear in your voice the kind of energy you must bring to your own patients when you're nursing, and like the fact that you could have been a person disabled in chronic conditions, and what that does to your psyche and to your ability to be a bright light, of course, is tremendous. So I feel so grateful that you stumbled upon it. And the one thing I want to say kind of from a spiritual slant is that, and when I say spiritual, I just mean the larger meaning, you know, however that lands for people, is you said at one point earlier, well, the one thing that came out of it was that I started exercising every day, you know, like you basically started taking a little bit better care of yourself. But I want to really expand that, because it is not the one thing that came out of it. The everything that came out of it is you are so young, and you have your whole life ahead of you to not be a person that is just like knocking out chronic condition after chronic condition, and just a generally anxious person, and all that bullshit that we all carry from childhood. Like, you have been invited to have a life that is so much bigger than you ever would have had. So I always want to bring that connection to, in the worst moments of suffering, there is every good that is happening, because you are being invited to be a different person in the way you interact with the world, the way you interact with your inner child, with your past, with your family. And it never ceases to humble me to the grand gift that these low moments hand us. So I can't not say it, you know?
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. And I love when you say things like that, because I think it's easy to, you know, feel bad about this experience, but you're so right. Like, after this, you know, journey of chronic pain, and it really forced me to look at my life and change the way I live and change the way I look at things. And it's, you know, it is a blessing. It's like, it sucks, and, you know, during experiencing the pain, but it is a blessing. And honestly, I am grateful to have experienced this, and it's made me a better person. And I'm really fortunate that I found this work when I did, because, you know, I'm glad I didn't have to experience years and years of this pain. I know it's not the same for everyone, but yeah, it's life-changing. I can't, like, I tell everyone I know about this work, and it doesn't always, you know, resonate with people, but when it does, it's just, it's the best feeling.
You know, I'm doing so many things right now, but one of the projects I'm involved in with Christina Sarno, Dr. Sarno's daughter, who is a close friend and colleague of mine, that we're creating a training course for professionals, for people like you, to bring this work into the medical system, into the physical therapy system, into the acupuncture and alternative medicine space. Like, we are really making a push right now because, you know, what we always say, what you and I are saying today, is that there's very few people in the medical model that want to shut patients down. I mean, everybody wants to help. They just don't have the right tools. And so I love that you're in the nursing field, because in some small way, in whatever way you're in, you are going to make that difference. You're going to bring this knowledge, you know, and that's what I always hope and project for the way this work will spread across the globe, is it will never be a top-down situation. It's not going to come from big pharma or the big surgical model or the established medical model. It's going to come from the millions of us, the little people that are going to inject it into our daily lives, whether it be conversations with friends or your professional life or, you know, whatever. And that's how it's going to happen. And you're part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a little, like, it's disheartening when I think about, you know, it's not going to be a top-down thing, but it's also amazing to be able to, you know, touch people's lives in this type of way. And yeah, I work in psychiatry, and it's really, you know, it's really sad, but it's also fascinating to see so many people, you know, come in with really unfortunate, really terrible trauma. But a lot of them experience pain, and it's making the connection is, you know, in my head, it's like very easy because I, you know about this work. And I really want to spread that to people. And that course sounds amazing. I will be doing it.
Amazing. Yes, we're hoping to roll it out in the fall. We're going to see how it goes. But right now we're hard at work just getting our best practices together. Christina is a practicing therapist for years doing this work on her own. So we've really kind of joined forces. It's really exciting. Okay, a few more things I want to talk about before we wrap. The first is talk to me about, like, your best advice. I often say this, you know, you're looking out over a sea of suffering people, potentially having their worst day that you ever had. You know, what advice, big or small, do you want to give to people out there?
I'm going to say this and then I'll explain it. Have faith. And by that, I don't mean, like, you know, you don't have to be religious or believe in God, but have faith, have hope that it'll work, that you'll feel better, you know, that this work will work, because I think that for me, that was like 80% of the battle.
Yes.
And it's just, however, whatever that means to you, for me, it meant, you know, if I doubted it because of everything I was taught, you know, I would listen to a podcast, listen to a success story, or, you know, whatever gave me that reassurance when I needed it, because I don't think, like, you know, society and the medical model, you know, doesn't always give you the reassurance. But have faith. I think a lot of it is, you know, having hope and really believing, because I do think, you know, a huge part of it is believing, because if you don't believe you're gonna get better, I mean, it is possible to get better, but I think it's so much easier when you can believe, and it's really, really hard. But, you know, if you need the reassurance, you know, listen to the podcasts, look up the work. Having faith and keeping hope is, if I didn't have that, I don't know where I'd be today. I think it's really important.
Yeah, you know, it's a great thing to say to people. And also, I want to just, because you're giving me the opportunity, bridge the gap very strongly between the concept of faith and the concept of science. Because what you're saying is actually more scientific than you may even realize. When you believe in what, and I don't mean believe because you just decide, believe because, like you said, you know, in my podcast alone, there's hundreds and hundreds of episodes and success stories and moments of proof and example that this is working. However it is that you bring yourself to belief, it's actually, it can be called faith, but it's actually enacting a scientific process in your brain, whereas your nervous system, within the space of your belief, can go into rest and repair and allow you to do this work. So actually, although I know that people often think that faith and science are juxtaposed, they're not. You know, in this case, the calm and the faith and the belief that you can cultivate through exposing yourself to the things that are out there lead to a nervous system regulation that allows you to do the work and have enduring healing and freedom. So it's really, really great to talk about it.
Oh my gosh. Yes, exactly. I love the way you put that. Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, when there's a capital T truth, sometimes there's nothing to say, but exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's it. That's what really helped me.
So, Shivani, thank you so much for coming on today. Is there anything else you want to throw in there before we wrap it up?
No, just thank you. And to anyone listening to this, you will get better. You will. Thank you.
Yes, I completely agree. And for everyone listening, hear it from my voice. If you do this work with belief and patience and kindness for yourself, and you allow your body to be your proof, because not on every day will you feel better, but you will have moments of better, and you can hold them and nurture them and believe them like you would a precious seedling, you will get better. And you will be able to be a person like Shivani who now can take this work out into the world, which is the way we're going to change the world. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
It is my great pleasure. All right, everyone. Well, I am so thrilled to have been able to bring this talk with you today. It's so important that we share this work, and it's so important that we have something to marinate in. You know, this is it. This is how you marinate and have belief. And if you guys are enjoying the podcast, please just hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It helps people like Shivani find the podcast, which is so important. And until next week, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.